Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
I don't know how this came up in the pre-show meeting because it's been a couple hours now, but there is one theory working out there that the Browns have too many quarterbacks to run a proper search.
Oh yeah, so I was on a YouTube show, the last chance you coach, James Brown, right? And he was just asking
the problematic one.
The problematic one. That's how I would describe him.
The one that's also weirdly lost weight but still looks really fat, or is that a different one?
I didn't describe him that way. You want to describe him that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. He had a cigar while he did the interview. I thought that was nice. Okay. It was like 9:30 in the morning.
Kind of talks like Jason Williams.
Okay, so you're very aware of his work is what you're telling me.
I
know very little about the guy. When I described him to you, I'm like, I think he's problematic, but I'm not sure. I've done zero research. Just a buddy of mine reached out and said, will you do the interview? And I said, sure, I'll do the interview. Why not? And so it was always a favor to a friend. That's all it was. So I go on this show, and I mean, this guy, you know, he knows football. He might be problematic, but he knows football. And the thing he kept harping on was the idea, he's like, he didn't know or understand how Shedeur Sanders was going to get enough reps in order to showcase that he can actually win the job. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good point. Like, I don't know that we've discussed it enough, the idea that when you have four quarterbacks like this, how are you even going to get enough reps and enough opportunity to showcase what you can actually do if there aren't enough reps?
I think it's because Joe Flacco's not going to get a lot of reps.
Well, and so that begged the question then. So if you have to, do you have to move on Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett maybe sooner than you initially thought? Like, everyone is thinking they'll build up their own cred and then you trade them before week one. You have them go through the preseason games, everything else in between. You might have to trade one of those guys way earlier than you anticipate if you need to be able to have the reps and the opportunities for these guys to actually be on the field and get some playing time.
No, I mean, I think the way you're going to do it is, I kind of feel like they treated Joe like this when he was here and they were trying to still make sure, basically keep DTR ready. Remember when Joe first got here and he was on the practice squad and DTR was still getting more reps and then Joe started the game?
Yeah.
Like, I would not be surprised if Joe was the guy who they're like, well, we know he'll be ready. We know he knows the system, so we're going to give the practice reps to Shedeur, to Dylan Gabriel, and to Kenny Pickett.
Okay, I like that thought. Joe Flacco basically does nothing in all training camp, because basically he'd prefer the rest anyway.
Yeah. Does that? No.
I like that.
And by the way, it's still going to be really hard.
You're still splitting three reps for potentially trying to be the number one quarterback on the team.
But like,
three guys.
In this case, Joe would take the role, in terms of reps in a practice, of getting roughly 8 reps per practice. And then the question is, all right, who gets the most amount of practice? I honestly think it should be the rookies early because, quite frankly, you've got a 2-month ramp up from the beginning of training camp to the beginning of the regular season, and or 8 weeks, roughly 9 weeks. And I think early reps, I think that gives you an indication of where the rookies are. If neither of them takes hold, then you flip it to Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco halfway through camp.
I guess I'm just really curious to find out how he ends up doing this because there's a million ways. But one thing we do know, it's not like it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago where you could just practice all day long and then figure it out. They monitor this stuff and they regulate this stuff in such a heavy way now.
Well, and it's always weird because every team kind of handles it differently. But I do think Kenny Pickett's going to get in the way. Like, if we start to have the how soon do you have to move on from Flacco or Pickett sooner, I'd probably say it's Pickett just because I don't want that guy taking reps from the young quarterbacks.
I like the case that you're making. I do. I like the case a lot because you're 100% right. Joe Flacco doesn't need any preseason practice training camp reps at all in the slightest bit. And if you get rid of Pickett, then you're just giving it to the two quarterbacks that are rookies and they can figure it out for themselves.
Now, the problem is going to be, I think Kenny, I don't think any of the stuff from Berea with Stefanski, I don't think he's lying that he really likes Kenny Pickett. I don't think it's coincidence that two of the quarterbacks they've went hardest for that he personally has said the most about are Kenny Pickett and Dylan Gabriel.
No, I think he looks at this like this is his Sam Darnold.
Yes.
I genuinely do. I don't know why people think that's such a confusing take or so, like, whatever. I think he looks at it like it's a free roll, the same way Kevin O'Connell was on a free roll with Sam Darnold. And if things work out, then great. And it's all about upping his perception more than it is anything else.
But I do think, like, I think that's where, I don't want to say it's problematic, but that's where it becomes a problem, where math just, you can't make it math any differently, is you're probably going to give Kenny the first team reps, and then maybe you alternate between Shador and Dylan, and I don't know that helps you get any closer this year.
Then it's really hard to figure out even between the two of them in such limited amount of opportunities, like who's actually winning that battle, yeah. who's looking better, and who's the one that we need to be actually playing.
And here's the other flaw in this law, and maybe it isn't a flaw in the logic because maybe they don't, again, maybe they think we want to be as competitive as they can be, but we're not trying to make a push for the playoffs here. Maybe they're being realistic about that. I'd be surprised if Kevin used that principle in terms of how he actually practices, meaning like at some point, if Joe Flacco is going to be your starter, you're going to need him to practice enough because you're going to need the locker room to buy into it, and you want to make sure there's enough continuity to hit the ground running early. But there is a part of me that's like, all right, are you going to set yourself up for failure? If my thought is right,
yeah,
Joe's going to basically get the least amount of reps, let the young guys battle early, and then maybe they all just take a turn rotating with the first team, right? Maybe one day is Kenny's day, the next day is Shador's day, maybe the next is Dylan's day, that kind of thing.
And then through a few weeks, they figure it out, or what?
But just suss out where everybody is. At some point, though, you are probably putting Joe Flacco behind the eight ball if he's just your break glass in case of emergency. And through those 3 weeks, it's pretty obvious none of the young quarterbacks can take the job.
Well, but I think Joe would argue that he was put behind the eight ball 2 years ago when he entered halfway through the season coming off his couch, and he was able to overcome that. So, like, if anything, you can make an argument that Joe has just been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Like, if anyone was prepared to be in that spot, it would be him.
Do you think, let me ask you, what do you think Joe wants? Do you think Joe wants more prep, or do you think he wants less prep?
Good question. It's kind of like when, like Travis Kelce. Do I feel like Travis Kelce wants to play all 17 games? No. Do I feel like Travis Kelce wants to do the thing that Gronk did, where Gronk in Tampa Bay showed up for week 8 and then was able to go ahead and play? Yeah, I think more than not, that's what he would want. So
I think Joe wants the best crack at making this his job for as long as he wants it.
No, but if you told him you get to start week 1, but we're giving all these reps to everyone else, I don't think he's got a problem with that.
He doesn't seem like a guy that's going to raise a problem. So I think Joe is a get-along guy, and I think that's one of the reasons why Joe, like, the dude's consistent, he is who he is, and he will roll with the punches, and that's why he never made excuses for himself in the 6 games that he played 2 years ago. It doesn't mean that's maybe what he prefers. Like, I think that part of him that's like, yeah, like veteran day. Sure, I'd like some of those because I'm 40.
Listen, ideal world, he gets every snap under the sun, and then he gets to start week 1, and then he just is awesome and everything's great. That's what he prefer, but it's not an ideal world when you're 40 years old and the whole NFL world doesn't think you're really anything at this point. Like, you got to roll with the punches a little bit here. Like, if Joe was promised week 1 starter, but he just has to divvy up the reps and he doesn't really get to do much in preseason, I think he'd take that and he'd run with it.
Oh, I don't think they're going to promise anyone anything.
No, they won't. I think the hypothetical we were playing under right there.
Oh, no. That's not what I was saying. What I was saying is Joe is the break glass in case of emergency, meaning that, okay, Joe, we're going to give you a chance to do this, but of course, if the rookies are ready, the young guys are going to play, but you're going to get to a point where...
Oh, Joe feels jobbed at that point.
Okay, so I think that's...
Joe feels ripped off.
Not just Joe feels jobbed.
Which, by the way...
That has repercussions within the veteran locker room as well.
Yeah, but in that instance, Well, this is why I would argue that you would just have to trade Joe Flacco before you even ever got there. But I would argue I don't care about Joe Flacco's feelings in that regard. You just have to do what's best for the team. And what's best for the team is figuring out which of those three quarterbacks can actually play.
I think in a vacuum, I know that sounds good. I think in a real living, breathing locker room, if you handle this quarterback thing the wrong way, you can sink Kevin Stefanski's battleship. The line that they're walking this year is trying to develop as much of these young guys as they possibly can, quarterback notwithstanding.
Okay, so what's the right
everybody,
way, then?
It has to appear legitimate to the locker room. And I think that's
like
the problem.
What Coach was saying earlier today was the idea that how do you possibly get enough of them a fair shake if there's four quarterbacks? Because the NFL and the rules attached to the practices just don't allow you enough of time and opportunity to even give everyone a fair shake. If you're divvying up four guys with the different practice reps.
I think the problem with Kevin is that if you do it the wrong way, it is going to hurt you in the locker room. And listen, 3 wins, 7 wins, 10 wins. I don't think there's a lot. No, I don't want to say that there's not a lot that can lose Kevin his job. The one thing that I think he won't be able to walk back is if he loses the locker room. And I think that is 100% tied to how do they run the quarterback search.
All right, how would you run it, though, if you were starting up then? Because, I get what you're saying. You can't fumble it.
Am I in Kevin's?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. You can't fumble it. But
I give Joe the first team reps, and I let everybody else fight for scraps until one of them shows me something. Or until Joe just completely botches out of the gate.
Okay, so you're having Joe start week one, and Joe gets all the reps leading up to it, and then Shador and Dylan Gabriel and Kenny Pickett are just kind of, they're just feasting for everything
one.
Else in the background.
No, that's how I said. I said I run a legitimate job search. Joe gets the first crack at it, then Kenny probably gets a second crack at it. But
then in time, they just weed each other out? Is that what happens?
Over the course of camp in the preseason, yeah. I mean, because here's the thing, you're going to be able to play the young quarterbacks, specifically Shador and Dylan, as much as you want in the preseason. That's another great way to kind of assess where they are. So day one of training camp, Joe is QB1. And then we get a week in. All right, is Joe still QB1? Who's QB2? Like, I handle it every week. We just go by in the most logical, pragmatic way possible. That's how I think you set up Kevin to start the season best. I don't know that's what they do, because I think you do have to get a really good picture of where these rookies are, including in practice. But if this is about helping Kevin be here beyond this year and setting Kevin up to give him the best chance to succeed, and not just Kevin, give that locker room the best chance to succeed, I think that's how you got to run it.
I think I liked your point in the beginning better than the most recent one that you made in this segment. The idea that you can use Joe Flacco as if he is a 40-year-old quarterback and you don't have to – he doesn't need all the reps in the world.
All right, but then if he sucks week one, you got to understand you did that to yourself, because the locker room's going to understand that, right?
Well, again, but I'd go back on the idea that the people in the locker room that care the most about that watched him come off his couch and be good at football. Like, they know that if anybody can rely on not having a bunch of reps and being great at it and looking the part and doing the part, it's Joe Flacco.
216-474-0092. Do the Browns have too many quarterbacks to run a proper search? And if that is correct, does that mean the Browns have to move on from either Flacco or Pickett sooner than anticipated? Trevor Sikkema of PFF will tell us where he thinks the Browns rank in the NFL after the NFL draft. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Trevor Sikkema of PFF, the lead NFL draft analyst, joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Trevor, welcome to the show, buddy.
Well, don't say that I'm not going to do it again. You got to get people to keep listening. You know, they don't know whether or not I'm going to do it again on the show. But I appreciate you guys having me back after a little, you know, colorful language for me last time.
Trevor, they know you're a wild card.
Yeah,
they know anything can come out of your mouth there.
This is true. That's why you guys have me on, I'm sure. Not for my draft analysis, but for the entertainment ratings.
So how different are you now that you're married? Because you weren't married the last time we talked to you.
Congrats.
Thank you. Much wiser, you know. I just so much wisdom and everything going. Now it's been like a month, so life is good. Married life is good, fellas. I highly recommend it.
Did you get drunk on your wedding night? I stayed relatively sober, and it's one of the regrets of my life.
No, I did not get super carried away on my wedding night. Now the rest of the weekend, I feel like I loosened up a little bit, but. There's a lot of things going on, you know. It's like you got to kind of be coherent to make sure that you're, you know, dealing with things, you know, talking to the wedding planner. Obviously, you don't want to do anything dumb while you're there. You're talking to guests, everything. So I didn't want to get too carried away my wedding night, but on the nights around that, especially the night after that, we had a good time.
Very proud of you there. All right, so let's get to the Browns post-draft here. Would you consider the Browns roster one of the three worst rosters in the NFL?
I don't know the other rosters off the top of my head, but obviously it's a team that's, you know, in a rebuild mode right now, right? I mean, like the owners said that as much. Once you admit that the Deshaun Watson move was a failure and that it's time to move on, well, all of a sudden, like, you know, you're having to turn things around. And I think that that's the catalyst for moving off of number two. Now, I think that what the Browns did here, it was obviously a long-term play draft. And so sometimes you have draft hauls that aren't as fair to judge in the moment. And I'm kind of harsh on the Browns draft because, you know, I didn't really understand the logic of the way they went about the quarterback position. I don't like the fact that they moved on from drafting Travis Hunter, who if I had to bet on one of these guys in this draft being generational, I would have bet on Travis Hunter being that player. Even though I like Mason Graham, I like that they got a future first. It was just it's a tough draft to sort of have a final opinion on right now. Even though there are things that I like, some things that I didn't, it is one of those drafts that you kind of just have to wait and see because of the types of bets that they make.
Now, Trevor, historically, you were a person that Nick always went to when we get in a Shador Sanders argument, and he'd be like, Sikkema says he sucks. And I'm like, okay, well, that answers that then. And PFF, I told you about your tools and what happens with your mock drafts, that anytime I took Shador would give me a D or an F. But how'd you feel about the fifth round for Shador? There's a lot of value there. Does that change anything for you?
Yeah, it's so strange, right? Because I remember I was on with you guys last time, and I kind of had to talk about the other side of things of here's why I wouldn't draft Shador Sanders at number two, right? And I had to talk about, like, this is why I would not take him as a first-round quarterback. But all of a sudden, the fifth round, I mean, now we've swung so far in the opposite direction, and now you have to think, okay, well, he didn't fall to the fifth round because of talent. You know, he maybe wasn't a first-round pick because of talent, but clearly the NFL just did not like whatever he was putting down during the draft process, whether it was the interviews, the top 30 visits, like whatever, the Deion Sanders, and obviously the last name, the everything that kind of comes with that, whatever it was, that's the catalyst of why he falls to day three. I think talent-wise, he should have absolutely been picked somewhere on day two. Now he gets to round five, and the weird part about it is for the Browns is, they took a quarterback who I have ranked way below Shador Sanders at number 94 in the third round in Dylan Gabriel. So I don't even really know what to think of them drafting both of these quarterbacks, because it's almost like I want to give you credit for drafting Shador in the fifth round just out of pure talent. But now I have to go, well, hold on a second. 50 picks earlier, you picked a quarterback who I think is much less capable to be a starting quarterback at the NFL level. And there, in my opinion, if you're going to take a swing on the first quarterback, you kind of have to judge on who you take first. And so, it's sort of like this. I want to give you credit, but I kind of can't. So it was just very strange, Shador lasting as long as he did. But, hey, now he's in Cleveland, and he'll certainly have a chance to be either the preferred backup of this team or maybe even the starting quarterback this upcoming season.
Trevor, should we base our expectations off of where
Nerds? Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Shador was drafted for him, or where maybe the talent says he should have been drafted?
I think that it probably has to be the latter. I really do. You can sort of say, like, oh, well, he's a fifth-round pick. You know, there's nothing to it. But the fact of the matter is he's not going to get treated like a fifth-round pick, right? He is still going to get treated like maybe not when it comes to overall, like, where he is on the pecking order to start training camp, like on the depth chart. I feel like if he would have been picked in the first round, he probably would have been, well, QB2 right now for sure, probably behind Flacco if I'm guessing. And now it's probably a wide open competition. But the fact of the matter is, nobody's going to talk about Shador as if he was a fifth round pick, because we had to sit here for 10 months and talk about him as a top five pick. And I think that's just the way that people approach things right now and their thoughts of Shador. So just to more answer your question, I think going into next season, if he would have been picked in the first round, I think he would have been QB2 on the initial depth chart at worst. And now going into training camp, I think the way that this team is going to talk about that room and that situation is they're going to truly say, hey, let the best man win no matter what. So it's going to be a little bit of a different conversation, but I think it's going to be a lot closer to where we regarded him previously to the draft rather than the fifth round where he ended up going.
You said you thought the difference between Shador and Dylan Gabriel, I believe you used the term way, way down relative to where Gabriel was. Tell me what the differences are. Tell me what you see and why you think Shador is that much better of a quarterback than Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah, so I had Gabriel ranked as my 164th prospect, and he gets picked 94th. Now, I understand there's a quarterback bump. Anytime a team needs a quarterback, you're going to kind of treat those guys a little bit differently. It's almost hard to put quarterbacks on a normal big board anyways. But that's still a 70-spot jump for me of where I had him versus where he got picked. Shador, on the other hand, I had him ranked 45th on my big board, which I felt like was very low compared to consensus. And he gets picked 144, so it's almost a 100-pick surplus there. So that's where I had those guys ranked on the board. And the reason why I had them so differently is I think Dylan Gabriel plays a very clean game between the 20s. Very clearly, he just understands the game very well. He has that experience, which turns into really good play for him. He's got good ball placement, good accuracy, good decision-making. He knows how to read defenses. The issues just come from lack of physical tools. And I talk about that with Shador Sanders as well, but I like Shador Sanders' physical tools a lot more than I like Dylan Gabriel's. And when I watch Gabriel, the reason why I was so much lower on him, and I'll be honest, this is a quarterback that I had in my top 100 at one point during the college football season because of how clean of a game of football he played. But when I watched him at the Senior Bowl specifically, there was something that happened on day three that I was really looking forward to seeing. What Dylan Gabriel was going to be in the red zone. Because day three of Senior Bowl practices are always, you get into the red zone work. And red zone is where Dylan Gabriel really struggled in college football. And it's a spot where I expect him to struggle a little bit in the NFL because he doesn't have that arm where he can truly just zip it in there. And space is at such a premium when you were in the red zone, and he just doesn't have those physical tools. So without the ability to truly anticipate and put air under the ball and be more of a touch passer, it was more difficult for him to convert. And then the other thing was, on day three, they were really pressuring Dylan Gabriel to his left, forcing him to roll right as a left-handed quarterback, try to get him to either throw on the run or reset his feet and throw, and it's just difficult for him to do that. If they're seeing that at the Senior Bowl, and if they saw that in college football, they're going to see it at the NFL level as well. Shador, I at least think, plays that clean brand of football as well, but he's also shown up in some huge moments, and I just genuinely believe he's got a little bit more juice in his arm than Gabriel does. So I think he's a little bit more – I think Gabriel is more limited situationally than Shador is. And if you're going to look at two of these players and say, hey, we've got to bet on one of these guys to get better, I tell you that Shador has better tools to be able to do that.
Looking to the rest of the draft, what do you think the Browns did well in this draft?
Well, I think that their running back room's awesome now, right? And this was a unit that desperately needed a ground game last season. And getting Quinshon Judkins in the second round at number 36, I think he is a tone setter for them. He was my RB1 coming into the year from his tape at Ole Miss. I just didn't feel as though he played with that same sort of fiery passion at Ohio State really until they started making a run in the college football playoff. Then he started to turn it on a little bit more. We saw more of the Ole Miss version of him. But that version of him is a starting running back in the NFL who could play all three downs, in my opinion. And then Dylan Sampson, I had him ranked 55 in the class, and you get him at 126. I mean, that is excellent value. I even had Dylan Sampson barely ranked above Quinshon Judkins. So for you to get both of these players as your 1-2 in the backfield, I think that significantly makes the ground game better. And I thought that was a big issue for Cleveland last season. No matter who was playing quarterback for them, they didn't have any sort of a ground game to be able to lean on. So those two guys, fresh legs, young legs, guys who give you extra power, extra juice, really like what they did there. And at the very least, their run game is going to be a lot better this upcoming season.
Is it okay the way the draft fell that they didn't end up taking anything for the offensive line or anything for wide receiver?
I don't love that they didn't take anything on the offensive line. And that also goes into me giving them a lower draft grade overall, is that when I look at this team and when I look at their depth chart, man, this offensive line could look significantly different, not just a year from now, but 2 years from now, right? You're looking at guys who are getting a little bit older, guys who are going to contemplate retirement, guys who are going to hit unrestricted free agency. Like, you're starting five this year. There is a chance, I don't know if this is the most likely chance, but there's a chance none of the starting five that you have this year will be on your roster in 2 years. That's a reality that this team has. And you watch teams around the league get ahead of offensive line needs as a bit of a luxury. And I just wish Cleveland would have done that more. Again, we're sort of looking at a situation where you draft two quarterbacks, you draft the tight end a little bit earlier than maybe I think that you could have, and you're drafting Carson Schwesinger at the top of the second round, basically as a fringe first round pick. Like, to me, I would have loved offensive line somewhere in there. You know, I can't praise the running back additions and then sit here and say I wish they would have taken a running back instead of Quinshon Judkins or something. So I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to be a hypocrite there, because I really do love the running backs that they brought in. But it goes back to taking two QBs. Man, I wish you would have just taken Shador in the third and then tried to take an offensive lineman a little bit later. Or, you know, stick with the quarterback that you drafted in the third and take one a little bit later. Now, obviously, we'll see what happens at that position, but I get nervous. I get nervous for this Cleveland Browns team, looking at that offensive line, how it struggled through some injury last year, how those guys aren't getting any younger, and how they did not get ahead of what could be a massive shift in their offensive line over the next 2 years.
Yeah, I kind of freaked out about the Dylan Gabriel thing, too, with Charles Grant there and Jared Wilson and a couple other nice players there. When it comes to the quarterback room, if you're the Browns, can you give all four quarterbacks a fair chance to win this job? Can you run a clean search with all four guys having a realistic claim to being the starting quarterback for the Browns this year?
I don't think you can, simply because there's only so many training camp reps that you can get for these guys. I think you are going to have a preliminary ranking. Your coaches have to sort of figure it out. And you can make it pretty deep, right? I would say that, you know, you could give a decent amount of snaps to maybe the first three guys, but QB4 is just straight up not going to get as many reps with the ones, and he probably shouldn't, right? And so you can't really go into this thing saying, okay, we have four starting quarterbacks, and each one of them is going to start one of our preseason games here. Or you can't even do that now, right? So I think that we get to this spot where you're just going to have to pick and choose a little bit. You're going to have some preliminary rankings. And you can let, I think you can let QB1 and QB2 sort of fight it out for who might be that starting quarterback in week 1. And then you can sort of let QB2 through QB4 fight it out and see who your preferred backup is going to be. But I don't think there's a way where you can give an even shot to all four of these guys. There's just not going to be enough snaps to go around.
I want to go to Pittsburgh for a second. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't end up signing with the Steelers, does Will Howard end up winning that job, or do you think it'd be Mason Rudolph?
I think that Will Howard wins that job. I really do. I think that Pittsburgh is operating under the assumption that they are going to have Aaron Rodgers on their team, and I think that they went about the draft like that. But Will Howard was my QB4 in this class. Like, I had Cam Ward, I had Shador Sanders, I had Jalen Milroe, and then he was next. Like, he's the guy that I say, okay, at least I'm not going to worry about the overall size, the mass that he has, the ability to make some plays with his legs, and I think he's got a decent NFL arm. So I'm not really worried about the physical ability to play the position at the pro level from Will Howard, and I think it would be a situation where, unless he looks really bad in training camp, I think you go to him and just see what you've got and see how he can grow throughout the year. It would probably be a situation where they say, hey, man, we don't need a ton from you. Just don't blow it, if you will, right? Just like don't make it so we're losing games because of you, but we don't need you to play Superman for us. So I think that he would. I think he would be the quarterback who wins that job.
All right, who starts more games in 2025, Shador Sanders or Will Howard?
I would say Shador Sanders, because I do believe that Aaron Rodgers is going to be the quarterback of the Steelers, and the Steelers are just historically a team that's always in it until the very end, and so I don't really anticipate them going through a quarterback change, whereas even if Shador does not start the season as the starter for this team, we've all seen Joe Flacco over the last couple of years. We've seen Kenny Pickett as well. I think Shador is probably going to get a very fair shot to start some games for them in 2025, whether that's in, you know, week 4, week 8, week 15, or even week 17 and 18 if the season ends up going not the way that they want to.
All right, we're going to put you on the hot seat. Predict the Browns' record this year. Go.
Well, knowing none of their opponents outside of their divisional opponents off the top of my head, I am going to say that this team wins, I'm going to say, 7 games.
I think right now it's the fifth hardest strength of schedule as of right now, if that does anything for you.
So maybe want to put it down to like a 5?
Or drop it to 6 now? Whatever.
Yeah, I'd probably drop it to 6. I have a lot of faith in Kevin Stefanski. I think he's a great coach. I really do. So I'd go with 6, final answer there.
All right, I guess. So this is one. We have about 30 seconds. Who is your QB1 in for the 2026 NFL draft heading into this offseason?
I have not watched a single ounce of tape for 2026 yet. But I would tell you Arch Manning, because I actually have seen him play in person. And I think he's got legit NFL tools. I know I'm not breaking any news here. But if he declares next cycle, it will be because he is talked about as a top 5 and even number 1 overall pick. So I'll go with Arch Manning is the easy answer there.
I'm actually going to act like I just heard Drew Aller because he's from Medina. But that's okay. Seriously, man, thank you so much. Congrats again. And we appreciate you, buddy.
I appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Trevor Sigma there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. One of the very nice gentlemen in all of media. Great stuff with him. When we come back, we're going to react to what he had to say about your Cleveland Browns draft and get to the question that we asked him about two rookie quarterbacks heading into the 2025 season in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I think in the end, talent will out this season. I think as long as Shador make sure to do everything Kevin Stefanski wants him to do in terms of prep and study and all that. Mm-hmm. I would be shocked if Shador doesn't see more games than Will Howard. I don't think we're going to see Will Howard unless Aaron Rodgers just doesn't show up in Pittsburgh.
Or you do what Ross Tucker had been campaigning for on Good Morning Football, which is just forgetting about Aaron Rodgers completely.
Yeah, that's not.
Doesn't seem likely. Yeah. It was not a bad idea. I understand and what then, Ross was getting at.
Now, did he say, and then trade for Kirk Cousins?
No, so actually, I want to lay out his philosophy for you because I thought it was pretty interesting. His thinking was basically, if you have Aaron Rodgers for one season, it's going nowhere anyway. So you might as well play Will Howard because eventually Will Howard could be something. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what is Aaron Rodgers going to actually do for you? He's going to get you to potentially a postseason game where you're once again going to be an underdog to a team that's probably going to take you out?
Man, I think that's a wildly cynical view of Aaron Rodgers.
You got to take it up with your buddy then.
I think I will. I'll text him right now.
You text him right now. You tell him, hey, great job on Good Morning Football. Hate the bacon take.
See, the problem is I did. I texted him this week.
And also the hate the Aaron Rodgers take too.
I was like, I got to tell you, buddy, you're killing it this week.
You're just acknowledging that he's on TV is what you're doing.
They have to make you a regular on that show because you're a breath of fresh air. And then that day, he had his, I think bacon's overrated take.
And then he followed it up with his Aaron Rodgers take.
It's like, I don't know you could offend me more than, you know, like, you could say bad things about me personally. I'd be like, I think you got a point. You say bad things about bacon, you're just wrong. You just have no taste buds. Like Jake. But specific to the Rodgers thing, I think people are all wrong about the Rodgers thing. Now, granted, the dude should actually sign at some point. I think now that we're through the draft, I think he's just gonna wait out through the end of involuntary OTAs.
Tomlin already gave him his deadline, which was the start of training camp. So like he gave him enough time.
Well, okay, that actually makes sense because Tomlin doesn't want to look like the guy who's like making an exception for Rodgers not being at OTAs. And mini camps.
Is this like you're a cool dad type move? Like you're a cool mom, you're a cool dad?
No. So he doesn't want to.
You've been a cool head coach?
If you're not under contract, you can't enforce that.
For sure.
So the idea is he's going to get paid the same thing no matter whether he signs yesterday or right before training camp. So why not let him get through, do his little ayahuasca trip in June while the team's at. And then after he gets back from Vision Quest, then you sign him And then, and so then
Aaron Rodgers, you got 2 months of Rumspringer, now figure it out.
No, but think about it. Then you don't look like a hypocrite if you're Tomlin and you still can save face with the locker room.
At the time that he put that deadline out there, a lot of people were pretty upset that it'd be so lax, but I'm with you. I think that's the right move with Rodgers. Putting restraints on Rodgers seems like it's like trying to control a toddler.
Yeah.
It's not going
to
work.
And just deal with him as little as you have to until things mean something.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that so many people, I feel like, believe that Will Howard might end up being blocked for the entire year. While it feels like just as many people believe Shedeur Sanders, if it's not week one, will get a crack at it at some point this season.
Yeah. Like, I think there's at least some chance of Shedeur starting week one. I don't know if it's a big chance, but there's greater than 1% chance of Shedeur starting week one. There's zero chance of Will Howard. Because if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, Tomlin just is not going to go to a rookie quarterback that early.
If Aaron Rodgers spurned them and decided not to play, I think he'd still go with Mason Rudolph over
Will
Howard.
Absolutely. And they probably would bring in another former slappy quarterback just to keep them some distance between having to play Will Howard
and earlier. So it goes Mason Rudolph, Skylar Thompson. And then Will Howard.
I was thinking maybe Dobbs gets cut again. Maybe Duck Hodges. It's time to bring the Duck back.
You bring Mitch Trubisky
Flying
back
v.
in the locker room. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, Flying Mitch v. Trubisky. That'd be really funny if they brought Mitch back.
That would be funny.
Where is he? Where is that crazy bastard?
I think Buffalo still, right?
He's back in Buffalo? Well, I knew he was back in Buffalo. I didn't know he was still back in Buffalo. That's good for him. That's good money.
Am I remembering that wrong, or is that not the case?
Because as soon as you said it, it made sense to me.
I mean, because there was the
wasn't there a Kansas City trip in there somewhere? Am I misremembering that?
Because remember, Trubisky was the one that started that the Week 18 game against the Patriots that ultimately cost the Patriots. Like Josh Allen got the record on start because Josh Allen's got a start record streak, so he came in and played one snap, and I think Trubisky played the rest of that game.
Yeah, Trubisky's a backup in Buffalo.
Yeah. Also, fun fact on that with Trubisky, from what I've been told and my understanding of that whole situation is. Josh Allen just loves him because he's really good at golf. I think I've told you this before.
This is the number one thing. This is how
Josh Allen just wants a good golf partner, and Mitch Trubisky is just like a good hang, and he's a good golfer, and so that's what he loves about him the most.
I think that's really, really prominent with NFL quarterbacks too. Like, is my backup just a good hang?
Well, it's like opening up as a comic on the road. Are you going to drink and hang out and be cool about things, or are you going to be uptight and weird about things?
Yeah, like Mark Maron wouldn't take Artie Lang on the... Okay, sorry. Artie Lang wouldn't take Mark Maron out on the road 15 years ago as an opener.
Yeah.
Because Mark's sober and sane, and Artie at that point was,
he wanted someone to party with, someone to hang out with, someone that he can get along with. Yeah,
there.
For sure.
And Artie still might be out there. We hope he's in good health. Megan at 57, by the way. What an upset. Now...
I used to like his radio show. Did you ever listen to the Artie Lang show that was on? It was on late night.
I liked it when he was not the central focus of a radio show. When he was with Howard Stern. The fourth guy. That was funny.
It was a late night sports show that he tried to do that was on TV at like 2 in the morning. And it was him and you remember John Ritchie too? I think he was on there as well. And I liked it, but it was the type of thing that you'd watch at 2 in the morning.
We like Artie Lang. We hope he's healthy. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess he got sober a couple years ago. Hopefully, he's still sober. Is what we're going to say.
Okay.
I think it's a landslide. I don't think there's a chance of that. Will Howard strikes me as if Rodgers gets hurt, Mason Rudolph fails, and it's like a week 17, throw him out there. Week 18, throw him out there. That's the only way I think he sees the field.
Well, the funny thing is that Steelers fans would clamor for him to be out there, but he is the Spider-Man meme. He is Mason Rudolph.
It's just so wild.
It's identical.
Have such a type there, and it's bad quarterbacks. They're big.
They're both 6'4". They're both 240. They're massive humans, and they just are what they are.
Mason Rudolph, bit of a mouth breather. Will actually seems pretty smart. So maybe they've differentiated where now it's not just big dumb quarterbacks. Now it's just big quarterbacks.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph does seem like he talks like how Nikki Glaser impersonated Gronk.
Yeah.
That's like that. That's how I think Mason Rudolph talks in my head.
216-474-0092.
And give me an impression there.
Diana.
Hey, you're the impression.
Diana, what are we doing?
You're the impression guy on the show.
You know how much just hearing my own impression of Chase Daniel makes me? He's gotten better. I'm going to say he's gotten better on the podcast. He still stinks on TV. What are we doing?
Diana.
Will the 49ers pay Brock Purdy? What are we doing? It's called a topic. All right. They come up with a topic, then you have an opinion that isn't asking people what you're doing. every time we talk about him, it gets very, very, very personal. It's just that he doesn't deserve the jobs that he's getting because he's not talented and he's not insightful.
But not personal. Yeah. We're not going to make this personal.
That's just an honest professional assessment of Chase Daniel.
I think he'd like an email form of that assessment.
Oh, I think audio works best.
Oh, okay.
Because then I can hear that my analysis is dripping with condescension. I worry that if I just sent a text, he might just read it dry, and he might not know that I really, really turn the TV off when he comes on.
Completely objective. No opinion.
Absolutely. I just call it like I see it. Right down the middle. 216-474-0092. Diana. Who will start more games this year? Will Howard or Shedeur Sanders? We got plenty to get to coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. More on the Cavs-Pacers series. But we lead off with, predictably, the lead in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.